Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and this is Book Talk with Fran Lewis, brought to you by MJ Network, MJ and Mary, and my sister, Marcia Joyce. And I am so excited. New York Times author David Bell is here with Try Not to Breathe. A traumatic experience in the line of duty forces 30-year-old Avery Rogers to abandon both her relationship and her position as a Kentucky State Police officer. She retreats to a college town where she works on an unfulfilling job as a security guard, breaking up fights between drunken frat boys. And I'm not going to go on and tell you anymore because David Bell is here and he'll tell you the rest. And gosh, if you haven't read this, what are you waiting for? Seriously. So good
well,
morning.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
I am so excited. You have no idea. The first scene with Anna, how does that set the stage for the events to come? And tell us why she would not call the police. Tell us about Kayla and why she wouldn't call the police.
Well, the very beginning of the book, Anna, who is a college student, comes home late at night from being out drinking, which is, you know, what college students do sometimes. And there's a strange man outside of her apartment building who seems to know who she is. And this naturally freaks her out and scares her. But she is reluctant to call the police because her father is a former police officer. And she's a little bit estranged from her dad. And if she gets the police involved, she thinks her dad's going to get involved. So she opts not to call the police. And, you know, that's going to have consequences as the book goes along. Because this guy who was outside of her house knows more about her than she realizes.
That is scary. So who is Tanya? And this really got me, the Midnight Rambler. How did you create that? Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, every once in a while there are strange characters who lurk around neighborhoods and towns and things like that. And in this case, this guy is a peeping Tom who's been going around the town. It's a college town. So he's been going around town and spying on young women and going into their homes and watching them sleep. And so Anna thinks that perhaps this guy who was outside of her house is this peeping Tom who has been seen around town. The only catch is this guy doesn't know Anna's name. So that's kind of the strange thing, is this person seems to know Anna. And so maybe it's not the peeping Tom that everybody thinks it is.
I won't give that away. But, they have Alicia texts her. That's the sisters. There are three sisters, Alicia, Avery, and Anna. I love Avery. She's got guts. I really like her. And why does Alicia text her to call her father?
Well, Anna has kind of cut off contact with her family. She's not speaking to her parents. Like I said, her father is a retired police officer. And so Anna has learned some things about the way her dad has conducted himself in the line of duty. And so she's not speaking to her parents right now. And naturally, her parents are worried about her. And so this happens in families, or at least it would happen in my family, that if the parents couldn't get in touch with one of their children, they might dispatch one of the other children to try to find out what's going on. I know that happens in my family, that my mom will direct one of my siblings to talk to one of the other siblings if she doesn't want to bother talking to them. So that's kind of what happens here, is that the parents send Alicia, who's the middle sister, to try to get a hold of Anna and find out what's going on with her.
I know. My mother said, if you don't come to a payphone and call me, if you're going to be 1 minute late, you're grounded for life. For real.
Yeah, sure. I can believe that.
I'm serious, and I wasn't allowed to have a cell phone growing up, so I had to find a payphone. That wasn't easy. So, what is
Anna?
Well,
plus you had to have a quarter in your pocket.
I had to pray I had a quarter in my pocket, or 50 cents or something in my pocket. But
right,
I learned
okay,
something
good.
That people need to know how to do. Reverse the charges. It works. Trust me.
Right. You can do that. Yeah, yeah. You can always do that to your parents.
That's if they accept the prayer charges.
Right, yeah.
So why does she decide to leave, and what is this protest? And if she stayed, would something have changed? I felt so bad. I was crying when that happened.
Well, what happens is that Anna has friends who live in Louisville in Kentucky, and they tell her that there's going to be a protest march against police brutality. And so not only does this give Anna a reason to go see her friends, but she kind of sees this as like, hey, this is an opportunity for me to stick it to my dad a little bit by attending this protest against the police. So that's why Anna runs off and goes to this protest in Louisville. It's a chance to be with a friend. It's also a chance to be politically involved. And the protest does not go well. All sorts of trouble happens at this protest, as you can imagine. Yeah.
That was sad, really sad. So if she had stayed, would Kayla be alive? Or maybe not?
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. It's hard to say what would have happened if she had stayed at home. It's possible she would have been in greater danger, too. So, Anna certainly feels responsible for leaving her roommate behind when she goes off to this protest. Yeah.
I know how that feels. So there are three sisters. I'm trying to make sure I get this right. Anna's mother is not the same as Alicia and Avery, right? And the father.
Right.
Oh, God help us. A father like that. So Anna, Alicia, and Avery, how would you describe their relationship? And they don't like each other. They distrust each other greatly.
Well, Avery and Anna do not get along very well.
Avery's
the oldest, and Anna is the youngest, and they have different mothers. And so Avery, it's not fair to Anna, but Avery kind of holds her resentment, directs her resentment that she feels for her father and the way her father's marriage to her mother broke up. She blames Anna for that. She directs her animosity toward Anna, even though obviously it's not Anna's fault. But when there's a second marriage like that, that can be difficult for the siblings to get along. So Avery blames Anna for that. Anna feels like she has tried to reach out to Avery. She's tried to have a relationship with Avery. She's been rebuffed by Avery a lot. So she's kind of given up on trying to have a relationship with Avery, even though she wants to. So those two sisters, the youngest and the oldest, really do not get along and don't see eye to eye. The middle sister, Alicia, is more of the peacemaker in the family. She wants everybody to get along. She wants to try to bring her siblings together. She wants to try to bring the whole family together. But if you've ever been in a family, you know sometimes that's difficult to do. So they all have the roles that they play in the family, and it's complicated. Family dynamics can get complicated sometimes.
Tell me about it.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that. You know, sometimes you don't mean to say something, you say the wrong thing, and then nobody talks to you anymore. It's sad. And it's really sad because sisters don't always get along, and then when it's too late, oh well. So tell us about Russ and Jane.
Well, Russ is the father of these three daughters. He is a retired police officer. He was highly decorated. He was injured in the line of duty and was forced to retire. He's partially disabled, so he's was not able to continue his career as a police officer, and he's in a lot of pain, physical pain, from the injuries that he suffered as a police officer, and he has issues that he doesn't really deal with. He's drinking a lot. He's taking a lot of pain medication. He's a little embittered about the way his life has ended up. And Jane is his second wife. Jane is the mother of Anna. And so he's a kind of a paranoid, angry guy, and kind of a domineering guy. And when Anna cuts off contact with the family, he tries to convince Avery, his oldest daughter, to go find Anna and find out what's going on. Avery and her father do not get along very well either, mainly because Avery feels like he judges her for the way her law enforcement career ended. She suffered a trauma in the line of duty. She stopped her police career, and she feels like, I can never measure up to Dad's expectations. He's never going to see me clearly. She simultaneously doesn't want to have anything to do with him and also desperately wants his approval. So there's a lot of complicated dynamics in this family.
Yeah, it was interesting to read how you created that. So Avery tries to stop a frat fight, and the police come, and why did they not back her up? Why did they treat her like she doesn't know what she's doing? And in a sense, she knew exactly what to do.
Well, I think it's just Avery is working, now that she's left the police force, she's gone to graduate school, and she works part-time as a security guard on a college campus, which would have to be one of the worst jobs I think that anybody could have. A low-paid security guard on a college campus, and she frequently finds herself dealing with just drunken, entitled students, and that's the first scene with Avery. We see her doing that, and the police officers from town look down their noses at her just a little bit because they dismiss her as merely a security guard or a rent-a-cop, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't treat her with the same respect that they would offer to a fellow officer, even though Avery has been a police officer and, like you said, does know how to handle herself in these situations. Although Avery, she lets her emotions get the best of her a little bit in this confrontation with these drunk frat boys.
Well, I'm just wondering what would have happened if she wasn't a female, was a male, would they have done the same thing?
Well, you have to think of that, right? There might be a little sexism involved in this as well, that's also part of the reason why they look down their nose at her, because she's a female officer, and the two town cops we're talking about are men, and they kind of look down their noses at her. So, yeah, I think that's definitely part of the equation.
So why is Avery questioned, and how do we realize that there's more to her father when she was growing up, without giving it away?
Well, her father has been wounded in the line of duty, and that shooting has never been solved. And so there's speculation that maybe this was someone taking revenge on their dad for something. If you've ever known police officers, you know that they do worry that someone may come back years later and try to take revenge on them if they arrested someone or whatever. So that is kind of in the background of the story, that this shooting that ended up disabling their father has never really been solved. And so Avery has, in the course of the book, Avery comes to find out a little more and a little more about what her dad may have been doing during his time as a police officer.
So who was Margaret, and what caused the family breakup? And is she's still around, isn't she?
Margaret is Avery and Alicia's mother.
Right.
And she's not. She had died. And it was just that Russ, the father of these daughters, had met someone new, and that first marriage had broken up, and Margaret never really recovered from that, and she ended up dying young, and that's part of the reason why Avery has that resentment for her father and her stepmother and for her half-sister Anna because she saw up close the toll that the end of this marriage took on her mother and saw her mother die at an early age. So that's a big part of the reason why Avery doesn't care for her half-sister or her stepmother in particular.
I don't blame them. I didn't like them anyway either. So,
well,
Anna goes
some
to
of the
meet the Douglas family. Why?
What's that now?
Why does Anna go to meet the Douglas family? Why does she go there? And why does she search for them?
Yeah. Well, so in the course of the book, Anna has, you know, essentially run away from her life. And she learns some things about her family and her identity. Mm-hmm. And so it leads her to a remote area in Kentucky where she thinks she's going to meet some people who can tell her more about her past and who she is. This turns out to be the Douglas family, and they are farmers, but they farm a particular crop, which is actually popular in Kentucky, marijuana. And so they have kind of a secret operation going on out here. They're not that keen on having complete strangers showing up on their door trying to talk to them. Naturally, they're a little paranoid about that. But they do let Anna in, and Anna comes to learn a lot about herself and her family. And this family, this new family who she meets once she's out there. And Avery is looking for her the whole time. So lo and behold, Avery ends up out there as well. There are a lot of secrets hidden out on this remote marijuana farm once the two sisters finally get there.
Well, I can't forget to talk about, to backtrack a bit, Anna, Rachel, and Eric attend a protest. And Avery, and who is Charlie Ballard? Oh, I like that man. And
Charlie,
why did she go after her? The father said she had to do that, right?
Well, Charlie is her father's former partner in law enforcement. And so when Avery is going off to find Anna, the dad says, go find Charlie and he can help you. The dad would, Russ says he would do it himself, but he has this disability and he can't get around as well. So he passes it off to his former partner, Charlie, who is like a little bit of a surrogate father, surrogate uncle to Avery and her sisters. And so the two of them go to this protest together to try to find Anna. And this whole protest erupts into violence once they're there. There's protesters and there are counter-protesters. And so that's everything kind of goes wrong at this protest right in the middle of the book.
Well, why do people do these things? I mean, I'm watching the news and they're protesting about everything, the climate, the weather, the storms. I mean, you could just protest about everything. People come up with anything. And most of these protests don't turn out too well, do they? That's what's really scary. That's what made this so real.
Well, I mean, there's always the danger that when you have large groups of people together like that, that it doesn't take many people, or it may only take one person. I think most people, when they go to something like that, whether it's a political rally or a protest or whatever, I don't think most people are going there looking for trouble, but it doesn't take many people, or maybe it only takes one person to turn a whole crowd in the wrong direction, or to cause a disruption to a whole crowd. And that's what happens at this protest in the book. Most people are there for peaceful reasons and for good reasons and benevolent reasons. But, you know, a small handful of people can turn everything the wrong way.
I know. You could have just one person, sort of like a telephone, into somebody's ear to somebody else, and then it snowballs. So I've seen that happen. That's even scarier.
Yeah, sure. You're right.
It's amazing. So why is Avery arrested? And what is her relationship with Charlie? I felt so bad.
Well, Charlie is softer than her dad. You know, Charlie, I think everybody when they grow up, you know, we have our parents, and even if our parents are great people, we still need people besides our parents to look up to, whether those are teachers, coaches, whatever, aunts, uncles. We always need other people, other adults to look up to and get a different perspective on the world from. And that's the role Charlie plays for Avery, is that she is not her parent, but she knows her, he knows her parents well, and he's a, just a different influence in her life. So what happens at the protest is that when all hell breaks loose, the police just start randomly arresting anybody they see, and they end up arresting Avery. Avery steps in and tries to protect Anna. Anna gets away, but Avery ends up getting arrested, and she gets thrown in the back of a police wagon and taken into the city jail and put in the holding cell. She's fortunate that when she's in the holding cell, she's actually able to continue her investigation and learn some important information when she's inside that cell that helps her go out and find Anna later on. But she does get temporarily thrown in jail for a few hours.
Well, the person that saved me was my grandmother, for my mother's toughness. And I would tell her, my mother, I'm going to tell on you, was my grandmother. That did it. Because, you like you said, you need somebody to protect you sometimes. So what happens?
Well, we need outside influences besides our parents, and so that always helps.
Yeah, grandma's, nobody messes with grandma. So what
right.
happens that cuts into her heart and why?
We're talking about Avery?
Yeah.
You mean at the end of the book or what?
In the middle when Charlie, what happens to Charlie during the protest?
Oh, well, Charlie has had some health problems, and so when when Avery gets out of jail, she tries to find Charlie and finds out, lo and behold, he's in the hospital because he had, in the course of this protest and all the chaos going on, he had felt ill, and so they had brought him to the hospital for observation. So he's having a whole battery of tests done, and they're talking about Anna and where Anna may be going, and Charlie provides Avery with some information about her dad and the past that helps Avery go on and ultimately find Anna out at this marijuana farm.
That's scary. So tell us about Rydell, and what does her father say? She has to go search for Anna, right? She doesn't have a choice in a sense, but she wants to, I guess.
Well, it's kind of that double-edged sword of she really does not necessarily want to do this. She really doesn't want to feel like she's doing something for her father. But you never really stop wanting your parents' approval, even if you aren't that crazy about your parents. And I think that's what's going on with Avery. She can't really say no to her dad. And as much as she complains about Anna, she can't really let her sister go wandering out into the rural Kentucky countryside without trying to find out if she's safe or not. So Avery feels compelled to go. She ends up in this small town called Rydell, Kentucky, which is a made-up town, by the way.
Okay.
And it's a very small town in the middle of nowhere, with almost nothing going on there and almost no one living there. But that is very close to this marijuana farm where Anna has ended up. So Avery goes into town and eventually ends up out at this marijuana farm where Anna is spending her time.
That is even more scary. And if you read that, you're going to find out about why that was really not great. So what does Charlie learn from his friend Mike before the protest? And who are Libby and Morris? And he doesn't tell Anna, Avery this.
Well, they find when they get to Louisville, Charlie has contacts in law enforcement, and so they speak to a guy who I believe is in the FBI, and they get the warning that there are going to be possibly counter protesters there, and so they know that in advance that this could be a dangerous situation. This guy Mike, who's in the FBI. kind of dropped some weird hints about Avery's father and his law enforcement career. And Avery doesn't fully understand it. The reader doesn't fully understand what he's saying until the end of the book. But this guy starts hints at some darker things that are going on that pay off later on in the book.
That's why there has to be a sequel. No, really, seriously. Too many loose ends, people. So tell us about how they got the Rambler. I mean, I think everybody in the world at one point has somebody that they think is following them, or they think somebody is outside their door, and you have to be careful when you answer the door, especially when you're a kid by yourself. So how did they get the Rambler?
Well, the Midnight Rambler is this peeping Tom who's been wandering around this college town. He is suspected of having done some worse things. Eventually, he just gets caught because somebody finds him coming into their house, and the police get a hold of him, and they question him. It turns out that he is this peeping Tom, but he has not ever committed any violent crimes. But he holds a key piece of information, a key piece of evidence that leads to the identity of the man who has been following Anna. So even though he is this weird peeping Tom kind of guy, he does play a large role in the story, and that he, because he sneaks around outside people's houses, he has observed this man who has been following Anna and provides some key information for him that gives law enforcement the opportunity to try to go find Anna and find out what's going on with her.
Well, who is, where am I here? I'm looking at my questions over here. Who is Rachel, and how does she meet Rachel?
Well, Rachel is one of Anna's friends from when they were growing up.
Yeah.
They grew up together. Rachel now lives in Louisville. So that's who Anna is going to see in Louisville at the beginning of the book. Rachel is a fairly typical college student. She likes to have a good time. She and Anna are counting on just having fun this weekend when they attend this protest. The weekend goes darker than they expected. But Rachel is just an old friend who Anna's entire family knows because she and Anna were friends when they were in high school together.
Well, how does Anna wind up on the compound? And how does Avery wind up there, too? And it's not exactly what everybody thinks it is.
Well, Anna learns some things about herself and her identity that lead her to try to go talk to these people out on this marijuana farm. And then Avery follows the trail thanks to the things that she learned in Louisville, the things that Charlie knows about her father's past. She ends up also going out to this marijuana farm. And she and Anna have a hard time seeing each other on this farm. Understandably, the people who work there are pretty paranoid. They're nervous about any strangers showing up, and they don't quite know what to make of Anna, and especially Avery, because they eventually find out that Avery is a former police officer, and so actually they don't want a former police officer showing up at this marijuana farm. So Anna and Avery are there in the same place, but it's difficult for them to get to see each other and talk to each other and compare notes. So both of them are trying to piece the story together separately, and then eventually they come together and figure everything out.
Well, how come they don't want Avery to leave? They make her stay, and she hasn't had anything that belongs to her, right? They give her someplace to stay. But why doesn't he want her to leave? What are they afraid is going to happen?
They're nervous that this former police officer has shown up and has taken a look at their whole operation, and they're not quite sure what her motivations are. So they're reluctant to let her leave until they know exactly what she intends to do to them. Is she there in a law enforcement capacity? Is she there just because her sister is there? They're not entirely sure what to make of Avery. And Avery is sort of a ballsy person who doesn't like to be told what to do. So there's some conflict there, you know, and they're kind of nervous about what she's up to. So they are not willing to let her leave right away. I mean, Avery shows up and she has a gun on her. She's a former police officer. So that naturally makes them wonder what she's up to. So they're very reluctant to let her leave, and they basically don't let her leave.
It's almost like she's kidnapped in that little place of her home. It's scary.
Yeah.
And no matter how hard she tries, well, who is Hank and what is this compound really about?
Well, Hank is a police officer, and he is Avery's ex-boyfriend. They served in the Kentucky State Police together. When Avery suffered this trauma that she suffered in the line of duty, she almost drowned trying to save someone in an accident. And that led to Avery leaving the police force. So when Avery's life went off the rails, when she was suffering from PTSD, when she was no longer able to continue in her career in law enforcement, her relationship with Hank also ended. So she and Hank have not seen each other for a while. But lo and behold, when Avery goes to this marijuana farm out in the middle of nowhere, she sees that Hank is there. And he is there. He has infiltrated this place and is gathering information about this marijuana operation. So Hank and Avery end up together at this farm, and it's complicated because Avery does not want to blow his cover. Avery does not want to feel like she needs Hank to take care of her or protect her. So all of those feelings are going on as they're all trying to figure out what is really going on beyond just cultivating marijuana on this farm. There are other criminal activities going on that have gone on in the present and in the past, and that's part of what's happening out there.
This seems to be a really big deal because I've watched the news and stuff and even the Weather Channel, and everybody's talking about marijuana, marijuana farms, and people with marijuana, this fentanyl thing. And I'm hoping that I actually get to do a panel on drug abuse and stuff like that, because I think that kids don't understand that, you know, marijuana they think is not addictive, but I don't think that's true either. That's what's really scary. I don't know.
Well, the issue with this marijuana farm where Avery ends up is it's not so much the cultivation of marijuana, it's all the associated crimes that this family is involved in. There are weapons, there's labor trafficking, you know, paying off police. So it's not just what they're growing, it's all the things that go into and surround growing this crop that are causing the problems here. And so this family and this marijuana farm is deeply involved in a lot of criminal activities.
And they don't want her to spill the beans, so they're going to try to keep her there. So Avery is very perceptive. That's why I like her. You can't fool her. So how does she realize that the workers are really not what they are? And how can she possibly get out of there? How did you create these scenes? Because, in a sense, even though what happens, she still finds herself loyal to Hank and everybody else.
Well, I mean, basically in any book, especially a thriller like the kind I write, the goal is to get the characters into so much trouble and so deep into trouble that it almost looks like it's impossible for them to ever get out. And so that is what I tried to do here, is that Avery gets so deep into trouble. She is out in the middle of nowhere. She has no weapons. She has no one knows where she is. And she is stuck on this farm, this compound that has guards, that has no way out. It looks like there's absolutely no hope for her. spoiler alert, she will get out. But that was really the fun of writing the story, was to say, how much trouble can I get these people into? How deep into the darkness can I get them before they find a way out? And so Avery has to find a creative way out of this farm. She has to face her deepest fears and get out of this farm. In the process, she is trying to help not just herself, not just her sister, but a number of people who are in trouble here. So the stakes are very high in the story because there are a lot of people whose lives are in danger as a result of what's happening out here. And so it's a chance for Avery to try to redeem herself.
I can't believe how she did it. I could not do that, that I could tell you now. So before I forget, August airs with Dr. George Cavuto and me, my friend Louis, my reading consultant. We're going to have not an interview, a discussion about the science of reading and how children are being taught to read today and what reading programs, a lot of the book companies, how to rewrite their books in order to follow the program. And it's amazing that if you ask a teacher what they're using, they have no idea that what the science of reading is, so maybe they'll learn it. On the 10th, the author of Hidden Pieces. On the 15th, Echoes from the Bio. And on the 17th, New York Times author Brian Freeman, The Bourne Defiance. If you haven't read that, oh my God, is that good. And the 21st is a panel with Vincent Zandri, Patrick Moore, David Putnam, and Jim Nesbitt to talk about how do you create a character that's completely Looney Tunes and how do you get away with it. And on the 23rd, Cindy McDonald with one of her fantastic Fiona Quinn and novels. You have no idea. I'm so excited. And I was worried about John Land. He just booked a show for February. This is really amazing. So
like you got a lot of great stuff going on.
I hope so. Yeah, I was very honored that I got an email from Tess Gerrinson. She's coming on September 20th with Spy Coast, her new character and new book. So I'm excited.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my husband says it keeps me out of store shopping. It's much better. So,
oh, okay. Yeah.
She had a fear, like I do, of something. And how does Avery overcome this fear? And what does she learn about herself?
Well, Avery is afraid of the water.
Me too.
The incident that happened in the line of duty that caused her to leave being a police officer, when she nearly drowned trying to rescue someone, she has always been afraid of the water, going back to her childhood, going back to having a fear of learning to swim when she was a child. Her father, who's not the nicest guy in the world, took the old school approach of trying to help her to swim by just throwing her in the deep end and hoping she would swim. So Avery has always had a fear of water, and that has haunted her. And lo and behold, when she's out on this farm, as it turns out, the only way off this farm and the only way to try to help the other people she's trying to help is going to lead her back to water. And she's going to have to face her gravest fear. If I had to face – I'm very afraid of heights. I'm not crazy about water, but I'm very afraid of heights. If I had to face great heights – to save my life or to save other people's lives. I don't know if I could do that. I really don't. But Avery faces that choice. She either has to face this greatest fear she has or possibly not be able to save the lives of other people. So you'll just have to read the book to see if she can do it. But that's where she is at the end of the book.
I don't even like walking at the top of a huge staircase with 20 stairs going down. That's too high for me too. And forget that.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about heights at all. But you know, I guess the question that the book is asking is how far would you be willing to go, and what would you be willing to face to save people you care about? And so that is kind of the question that Avery is confronting and answering by the end of the book.
So she sends Anna away, so why does she go back? She could have just left and then not come back.
Oh, Anna?
Why does Anna Avery, Avery leaves and then Anna leaves, he gets away. So how come Avery goes back?
Oh, well, I mean, Avery, I just think, feels like she can't leave other people behind. There are a number of other people on this farm whose lives are in danger if Avery doesn't help them. So it's really just a matter of her trying to do the right thing. Perhaps it's that law enforcement instinct that she needs to help as much as possible, or maybe it's just simple human decency that she feels like she can't walk away if there's something she can do to help other people. I mean, a lot of us would save ourselves and walk away, but Avery does not do that. Avery decides to go back and try to help others.
Well, that would be something that I would do, except if you asked me to go in the water. I know I can't do that. But I guess
never know what you would do. You never know what you would do in the most extreme situation.
Oh, I've done. Yeah, I know. That I do know, that I've done quite a bit in extreme situations. But sometimes, no matter how hard you try, you can't save somebody. And that's what's really scary. So she brings Anna home, and this is really amazing. She brings Anna home, and they talk, and she learns something, Avery, and she learns something about Russ and Jane, and that's the hard part. She has to make a moral decision, and you got to read this, because people are going to go one way or the other. Some people will say, yes, she did the right thing, and some people are going to say, no, she didn't do the right thing. So how did you create that, quandary, but that she has to deal with a moral decision? That's why there needs to be a sequel, seriously.
Oh, okay. I think it's always very difficult to know. We can think that we have principles that we live by, and we think that there are things that might be absolute principles of, you know, I would absolutely do this. I would absolutely do the right thing in this case. But when it's a member of our family, I don't know. It makes it much more difficult to do, as you're saying, the moral thing, the right thing. So at the end of the book, Avery has learned something about her father, and she faces the dilemma of, do I turn him in? But this is her father, you know. Even if she's not crazy about him, does she turn him in? Does she do the right thing? Or what is the right thing? I guess is the question you raised appropriately. So it is a difficult moral dilemma that Avery faces at the end of the book. And you're right. It's easy to sit in the abstract and to say I know what I would do, but until you're faced with that. Nobody's really sure what they would do in those cases.
Well, I can tell you, the decision to, I won't say who, saved somebody's life was taken out of my hands, and I think if I would have been given that decision, the person's life, she'd still be here. And that's what's really scary, because somebody else made a moral decision, and I disagreed with that person. So, it's scary. Will she stay close to her sisters? Will she be close to Alicia and Anna? And this, you have to like Anna. There's something about her. And Alicia seems to be like the steadfast in the middle. I'm going to, solve everything. I'm going to stay calm, whatever. And you probably need somebody like that. But are they going to stay close to each other, or are they going to just, because of what the parents are?
I would like to think that Avery and Anna have discovered new appreciation for each other. They've come to understand how much they really do care for each other. So I would like to think they're going to have a closer relationship now that they've put a lot of these things behind them, and they can move forward and have a more healthy, more loving, sisterly relationship. That's what I imagine happening. There's a lot of complicated family baggage going on now that they've all learned about. But I do think that those two people, Avery and Anna, now understand each other in a way that they had not understood each other before.
Well, I'm reading page 437. I'm not going to say what it says. And that's where Avery has to decide what she's going to do one way or the other. And that's a hard one. So how would you – secrets of lies and moral values destroyed, and yet there are people in this book that justify doing the wrong thing. And there are a lot of people that do justify doing the wrong thing because in their minds they only see it one way. And that's what made this book so interesting because I said, you know, people have different ways of different values, so you could have a really great book discussion about this one.
Well, everybody thinks they're doing the right thing. You know, I mean, everybody can come up with a rationalization for what they're doing and say, well, I needed to do this. Even the most horrible people who do the most horrible things have rationalizations and justifications for what they're doing. I think if you talk to most people who break the law or do terrible things, every once in a while you would find someone who would say, oh, yeah, I knew that was wrong and I did it anyway. But most of them are probably going to come up with some rationalization that says, well, you know, I needed to steal that money. I needed it for this or I needed to do that. And so, you know, that's kind of what you see. Everybody has their own version of the truth and facts, and they can spin them any way they want.
I know. I taught for a very long time, and you have kids that justify. I was lucky. I taught for a long time, and my students listened to me. They knew it was just better for them. But there were kids I heard in the hall say, I did it on purpose, or he had it coming, or he looked at this girl, or they justify doing the wrong thing, and nobody says anything. And the teacher says, well, that's the way it is. No, it's not the way it is. And then the child goes out and does something else. It's even worse. And it makes it makes you look. It makes you look like, you know, you're incompetent. I mean, there were kids in my school that got in trouble for doing a lot of things, and I was lucky that I had classes for a million years that they just knew, just listen to her. It's so much better. It's easier. Don't get on her nerves. But yeah, there were kids else. You'll hear them in the yard. Well, I'm going to beat him up after school because he stole my pen, or he's going to do that. And I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned in this book that people need to understand, that you can't always be the one that wins. Sometimes you have to admit that you lose. I don't know how they justify themselves, but sometimes you have to know you lose. So what?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. But people carry those rationalizations with them, and they use them as justifications for doing whatever they do.
I know a lot of people that do. So how would you define this? You know what got me? I saw this on Facebook. Then I emailed your publicist and I said, you got to let me read this. She was sending it anyway. And I get things like out of nowhere, which is great. Try not to breathe. What is the definition of the title? I mean, there's a whole lot of definitions that you could have in the title.
Oh, yeah.
See, I got that.
I mean, it means a couple of things. I mean, in a way, it literally refers to the fact that Avery is afraid of the water. And so when you're underwater, you try not to breathe. You know, you're terrified.
Yep.
And so it's that, holding your breath because you're underwater, which happens to Avery a couple times in the book. But also just going for that suspenseful feeling of if you're in danger, if you're in a crisis, if someone is sneaking up on you, you literally have to hold your breath and not make a sound or not make a move. There are a couple times in the book when there are characters who find themselves in that situation where you can't make a move, you can't. I always think if I was in one of these books and I was somewhere, I have such bad allergies that I would sneeze as the killer was coming up to me and I would give myself away that way. So it really is just saying, like, try not to breathe because someone is after you and you don't want them to hear where you are or hear where you're hiding. So it has a couple meanings like that.
It's even worse when your best friend is supposed to be your friend and tells on you even though you didn't do anything. There are some times where you're going to find that even grown-ups will say, well, she did it, and the police automatically turn around and go, yeah, you did it, without even looking at you, can barely hold your breath. That's really scary.
Sure.
Avery has to make another decision at the end. Do you think if she had a choice, if this continued, that she would go back to being a police officer? Because I think that she got fired for no reason.
I think she wants to return to law enforcement. I think that is part of who she is. I really do think that the story is a redemption story for Avery, where she proves that she's braver than she realized. And I also think it's about Avery discovering what really matters to her. And professionally, I think what matters to her is being a police officer and trying to help people, because that's what she does in the course of the book. She tries to help people. She tries to save people. She has that instinct to want to, as you said, question, probe, investigate, you know, do the right thing. So I do think at the end of the book, she's ready to go back to a career in law enforcement of some kind. If there's ever a sequel, we'll find out what Avery's up to. But yeah, I do think she's ready to do that. I think she knows who she really is by the end of this book.
You know what bothers me the most is that I listen to the news and I see that a whole bunch of news stories about police officers that shoot people, that don't shoot people, and they're giving them a bad name. That bothers me. Because I don't think they're all bad.
Well, you can't paint any large group of people with one brush. Yeah. You know, you can't just say any one group of people is all bad.
That's right.
And so I hope we're figuring that out as a society, that if there are things that need to change about the way law enforcement acts, then let's change them. If there are bad apples, then get the bad apples out. But, you know, 99.whatever% of police officers are trying to do the right thing just like anybody else. They're trying their best to do a very, very difficult job.
I agree. And what bothers me is that the governor of this state, oh, God, passed a law 2 years ago that people 21 years old and over can have an assault rifle. And I said, why in blazes would they need one? Why are you passing something like that? It just, like, makes it worse. So where do you see her next, and what's next for you? What's coming out next, and when am I getting it?
Where do I see Avery going next? I think she's probably going to start to work on getting back into law enforcement. I don't know what that's going to look like for her, but we'll see what that looks like. For me, I should have another adult suspense novel out next summer. It's going to be called Storm Warning, and it's about a group of people who are trapped on a barrier island in Florida with no power, no access to the mainland, and a hurricane is bearing down on them, and people start to die even before the hurricane hits because there's a murderer in the building with them, and so they have to try to make it through the night through the hurricane and also figure out which one of them is a murderer. So that should be out next summer.
That sounds good. It sounds like I'm what you wrote it with the Weather Channel in mind. Oh, my God. So where can everybody get more know about you and your work? This book is fantastic. Those of you that have not read Try Not to Breathe, I'm going to post my review on Facebook everywhere, and I will tell everybody to read it. And I will post the link, and
nice
I'll send it to you. I will send it to your publicist. Some people have great publicists like you do, and then there are some people that they're great. She's great. So, where can everybody learn more about you and get all your books?
Well, my website is davidbellnovels.com, and you can find me on social media: Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, or whatever they're calling Twitter now, at David Bell Novels. So you can find me on all of those places, and that's where I'll post about new books and events and whatever else is going on.
That is so cool. This has been really fun. It's just made my whole day, to be very honest. And your book, my dermatologist won't let me come. I don't have to go for a visit, but he calls ever so often and says, when are you bringing me titles to read for my wife?
Oh, I see.
I'm
okay.
Serious. I'm serious. I've got a bag of about, in the last couple of weeks I read 10 books a week, most of the time limited to at least 5 or more. And, yours is in there right now. And I'm going to go visit him next Wednesday and just bring the books to him. And that's the only reason why they let me come, and I don't have to wait, ever.
Oh, okay. So maybe I should try that with my dermatologist.
Yeah, I'm serious. His wife... it has maybe 10 bookshelves, and I'm the reason why she fills it with all of my books. She loves it. And then, of course, there's the UPS guy that takes some of the books. He might want yours, too. And then there's my neighbor, everybody. They call me the book queen of the building.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which
well,
helps.
I'll try that. I don't know if my dermatologist reads, but we'll try.
And if any time I go into whatever office, they want even the post office wants my books. So thank you so much. This has been great. Everyone, get a copy of Try Not to Breathe. As a matter, why don't you just get all of his books because you won't be disappointed. David Bell, thank you so much. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thank you, friends.